So I typed some stuff into DuckDuckGo and found out that, yes, there's some guy. He was a Muslim. ISIS claimed credit. Some guy blew himself up at a Ariana Grande or whatever, whoever she is, concert or something. 22 people died. A bunch of people were injured. I have no sympathy. I have none. Zero. Zero sympathy. Absolutely none. The bombings will continue until you remove your head from your ass. But women just want the alpha sperm, and nothing's going to stop them. You can scream and shout with all your might. Oh, you scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a fucking safe space. You can shove your opinions up your ass. That way the Trump and Fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, my friends and my enemies, the third and most likely possibility. You are wrong, and I am right. I am the great one himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect. The cruise missile that seeks out stupidity, seeks out statist, but I repeat myself, and blows them the fuck up. It has a stupidity and ignorance seeking warhead. Excuse me, stupidity and ignorance seeking guidance system. The warhead itself is nuclear. Those are two different fucking things. Today is still the 23rd of May in the year of our Lord, the Trump and Fuhrer, 2017. Another ISIS terrorist attack. More dumb white people are dead. You won't learn anything from it because you're just not capable of learning. And I have zero sympathy. Turned out to be a nice day here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. The forecast yesterday said it was going to rain all day long. So I braced myself for rain, and I had this list of things we were going to do, recording, and I was going to do some shit. And then it was fucking beautiful all day long. So we were at the studio this morning, and we recorded the previous episode. And I was going to knock out, you know, maybe three total. And it was gorgeous. And I just said, man, fuck this. I'm going to go run errands and you can do your thing. Then I went trail running out on the trail. Saw it's baby critter time because it's spring, even though we got snow dumped on us a couple of days ago, whenever it was. Oh, man, and the trees got their asses kicked because the snow broke all the tree limbs. But it's springtime and it's baby critter time. I saw a bunch of little baby goslings and some little baby ducks, and they were all cute and adorable. So this while I was out trail running, saw a few girls that were kind of attractive, but nothing really worth noticing. Oh, in the control room, speaking of cute girls, in the control room is the lovely and adorable Randy. I am the great one himself, the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, on the internet since 1999, podcasting for 12 years, 13 years on November the 1st of 2017 will be the 13th anniversary of the podcast. Oh yeah. So now, oh, and then I went over to Damn Good Tacos and had some damn good tacos. And yeah, ran a few errands, went by the library. No cute girls at the library is kind of sad. And here we are, talking about Muslims blowing up white people and how. And of course, starting tomorrow, which tomorrow as I'm recording this, you're actually not even going to hear this podcast until June. I'm that far ahead. I'm doing good here. This is great. I'm so happy not recording shit at the last minute. Oh, and I am drinking a Mango King from Funkworks Brewery. What the fuck was I talking? Less library, tacos. I was going somewhere with all that. Doesn't matter. Did my air, whatever. It'll come to me. The other thing. Oh! Muslims blowing people up, right? Tacos, Muslims blowing people up. It's obviously a direct correlation. Starting tomorrow, tomorrow being the 24th of May, not tomorrow, and when you hear this podcast, starting tomorrow, the news media will begin trotting out all of the articles on the interwebs entitled, "The Real Victims of the Bombing Are Muslims." Because we gotta keep the Muslims, we gotta have the Muslims blow people up to make more victims, but then we also have to make the Muslims into victims, because the entire government runs on victimhood. Remember, guys, if there are no fucking victims, there's no reason for a government. That's why the government isn't going to do anything. All of you who think, well, the government needs to protect people from Islamic terrorism. No, the government wants people to be blown up by Muslims because that creates victims. Victims need the government to provide for them. I've explained this before. This is why the government wants women to be raped. Did a podcast, probably two or three of them, I don't remember, but you can search the fucking site. It was called Why the State Wants Women to Be Raped, or something like that. And I explained to you, of course the government wants women to be raped, because when a woman is raped, she becomes a victim. She needs the government. Anyhow, there it is. Speaking of things that are there. A couple of casts ago, I was talking about the post Adam Piggott wrote over on his website, Pushing Rubber Downhill, about the fashion industry, and he had a picture of these five fashion models, and he was talking about how unattractive they are as I bump the microphone. Because, hang on, I'm going to really fuck things up now. Because I'm sitting down, so I don't normally do podcasts sitting down, but I decided I'd try it. All right, let me fuck with the mic. There we go. Oh, let me fuck with the mic some more. God, I got to fix this. I got to do something with that, too. I got to do a lot of things. Like your girlfriend. Anyway, he was talking about these five fashion models in this photo and talking about how hideously ugly they were, which they were. And I discussed how, you know, I'm looking at the girls and they're all kind of scrawny looking and don't have giant tits. And I was talking about how just the scrawniness and the lack of tits doesn't necessarily make women unattractive to me. But that I agreed the five women in this photo are amazingly unattractive. I couldn't really articulate exactly why these women were unattractive. And I figured it out some odd days later. Here's how I figured it out. I saw this woman in real life, not on the internet. And she was stunningly flat-chested. And she was fairly thin. She was not like... Another thing, these models in the picture, if you go back and you find and you look at these five girls, they're probably like 12 or 14 or something like that. Because in addition to dredging forth the most hideous clothing on the planet Earth, the fashion industry also likes to find the girls when they're really young and stupid. Well, young, because all girls are stupid. So I see this woman in the real world, who is thin, she's older, she's late 20s, flat-chested as fuck, and yet she was very attractive to me. Maybe not to you, and that's fine, but to me she's very attractive. So I'm thinking, well, what's the difference here between her and these thin, flat-chested models in the photo? Why is she attractive but they aren't? And I figured it out from comparing, contrast and compare here. She was nicely dressed in a way that accentuated what she has. Now, of course, I know for many of you, when I say when you say a woman is nicely dressed and accentuating what she has, the only thing you can think of is big titties. And I understand that for some men, the entire world revolves around big titties. And there's just, you don't know anything except big titties, right? You don't see the value in a woman's personality and her intelligence and her career and her college education, especially if she's majored in something really difficult and important like women's studies. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm joking about all of that. personality. Woo! Sometimes I just crack myself up. No, not that, but their other features, like their ass and their legs and their hip to waist ratio. And, you know, call me whatever, their shoulders. I like a chick with nice shoulders. Don't ask me what nice shoulders are exactly. It's like pornography. I can't define it. I know it when I see it. All right. So there are things a woman has which make her attractive other than giant titties. I know that for a lot of you out there, you're fucking just going berserk right now and screaming about what a faggot I am and how I've betrayed men and how I don't know anything about women because my entire fucking existence and every interaction with women is not fixated on giant titties. Now, women do have other things below the neck other than titties. Some of them are nice. So she had no breast, but she had a nice butt. She had a great figure. She had nice shoulders because she's wearing like a little tank toppy thing. And the first thing, I said, well, she's dressed very nicely. If you look at the five girls in this photo, they're not dressed nicely. Now, sure, they're probably wearing, well, there's no probably. They're wearing the stuff that some fashion designer, making a little air quotes, put them in. And fashion designers, to a large extent, don't know what the fuck they're doing. And that was something Adam was commenting on about how so-called fashion is just getting uglier and shittier and all this other stuff. The other difference is that the woman I was looking at in real life had a smile on her face and she looked very radiant and she was very happy with the things she was doing at the time when I was interacting with her. And no, it was not having sex with me. Unfortunately, it was not sucking my dick or anything else perverted like that, although that would have been great. She was doing something I was doing, so she was very happy. She was smiling. She was laughing. She was enjoying herself. The women in this picture that Piggott posted on his blog do not look happy. They don't look anything. They're just like just standing there with these blank looks of, if anything, they just have this sort of look of disgust that they have to be breathing air with common people or something. I don't know. But they definitely don't look happy. I don't remember exactly what they look like to try and describe it, but happy and radiant were not part of it. And that's why those five women are so fucking unappealing to me sexually. Not because they're scrawny, because they have small tits, but because they're wearing burlap bags for clothing. And because they just don't look at all remotely happy. I mean, they're probably five feminists or something. They're probably sitting there thinking about how the patriarchy is oppressing them by making them wear this ugly fucking clothing, but they're doing it anyway. I don't know what's going through their tiny little brains. All I know is they only have two compartments in their brains. One is for shopping and the other one they don't use. So there's that. I thought of all that. I wanted to toss it on out. I also wanted to toss this girl's salad, but I didn't do it. Oh, then there was the other chick. I don't want to even tell. Yeah, I can make this really short. So there was a chick, and I was like, you know, why don't you text me? And she's like, oh, I have your number. And she says, we need to go out and get a beer sometime because we never did. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, just whatever. So I sent her a text. And I said, what the fuck's up? And she said, not much. And I said, so when are we going to go get a beer? And she never responded. And then I saw her in person like 3 weeks later. And I said, you really suck at texting. And she said, well, I was doing really good for a while there. I'm like, no, you sent me two words. It's like, and it's just like, all right, I don't have time for your shit. I'm not chasing you. I didn't say that. That's how it works. So anyhow, once again, just the main point of that being, this is going to be hard for you to believe, women lie. When a woman says, again, this was her idea. I did not say, hey, do you want to go get a beer? She's the one who said, all right, so let me throw that out while I'm thinking, God damn it, I got to write all this down for show notes. Oh, fuck. Hmm. I did not say, do you want to go get a beer? She was the one who said, hey, we didn't ever win, got to be, do you want it? We should go get a beer. And I just said, sure, whatever. Women always fucking lie. I'm gonna back that up in just a minute. Oh yeah, okay, I was trying to remember the other thing I talked about. Dumpy fashion models. This is the problem about talking about things off the top of my head. I have to do show notes. Why women lie. Okay, everything a woman says is a lie. Here's the deal. For a woman, lying is her first natural inclination, which is hardwired into her via biology. Now, here's an example about men, because we have this too. As men, it is biologically hardwired into us that when a woman is in distress, we go and help them. This is something that's in our biology. It's helped the species survive. So, for example, the last time we had a big snow here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, not the one a few days ago, but this, you know, back during the winter proper, when it dumped snow all over the fucking place, it was 2 or 3 feet or whatever the fuck it was, there were a lot of cars that were stuck. And I'm out and about, and I'm walking along, and I see these two girls, one of them's in the car, the other one's behind it, trying to get their car out of the parallel parking and onto the road. And the girl's pushing. The very first thing that went into my brain is, oh, there's women in distress. I should go help them. See, that's my first inclination. That's biology says, go help women. Protect women. Save women. But I didn't do it because my rational brain took over and said, no. First of all, they're strong and independent. Second of all, they're probably liberal Democrats. Third of all, especially here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, there is an excellent chance that they are feminist. And fourth of all, they might even accuse me of trying to rape them. Who fucking knows? It's not worth it. Let them push the fucking car out on their own. They're strong and independent women's who care about the children's. Okay? Not my fucking problem. Not my monkey. Not my circus. So our biological programming says protect women, because you need women to make more people, reproduce, keep the species going. So unless we actively counteract that, we are going to rush forth and fucking white knight and beta male for every fucking woman on the planet Earth. And that's how we, the nation state of the United States, got where we are right now, because a bunch of stupid fucking men decided that letting women vote and have jobs and own property was a good idea. Now we're paying the price for their fuck up, because of course they wanted to beta male white knight women. Of course, oh honey, of course you should be allowed to vote. Oh my God, you're so smart. Will you please have sex with me? I'll vote to let you be allowed to vote if you'll have sex with me, because I'm so desperate. Because, you know, this was before internet porn was invented. Now, women, their biological programming, their number one imperative is their own survival. In order for a woman to survive, she needs resources. And she needs lots of resources. This is why when I say women have two compartments in the brain, one of them they don't use and the other is for shopping. Shopping, acquiring resources, not gathering them, not working for them, not earning them, but just going out and acquiring the resources. She acquires them from other people. Other people give her the resources, right? Women need to fit into society, whatever that society is, so that they can access the resources of society. A woman does not want to alienate and ostracize people around her because the people are around her are where she gets things from. That's where she gets people to push her car out of the snow. That's how she gets people to babysit her kid while she's off having sex with some alpha male she met at a bar. That's how she gets welfare. That's how she gets WIC. That's how she gets food stamps. That's how she gets alimony. That's how she gets child support. That's how she gets access to other alpha males, right? Women need to conform to the society in which they exist. Now, in order to conform to the society in which you exist, you need to not alienate other people. To not alienate other people, you need to tell them what they want to hear. Right? Donald Trump says things people don't want to hear. That's why he alienates so many snowflakes. I am the great one himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, and I say things people don't want to hear. That's why on the social medias, people call me racist, sexist, homophobic, talk about how I hate women, how my mother didn't raise me right, and all this other horseshit, okay? Because I'm not a fucking woman. I am not interested in being your fucking friend. I don't like you. I don't want anything from you. I'm not your fucking friend. Women need access to the resources of everyone around them so that women can be provisioned without having to do any actual fucking work other than occasionally spreading their legs for an alpha male and then pretending they're going to spread their legs for other people so that all the men in society will beta male for them. In order to not alienate people, you have to tell people what they want to hear. Most of what people want to hear is bullshit. Okay, women's automatic inclination, their biological wiring, tells them that whenever they're talking to another person, to just say what the other person wants to hear, regardless of the truth value of that. Now, yes, a woman can override her inclination to lie, to say what other people want to hear, just like I can override my inclination to push some chick's car out of the snow. But it's still the first thing that happens in their brain. And since women lack self-awareness, they don't really notice what's going on. And this explains why when you say to a woman, hey, do you want to, and oh God, and then there's this other chick I'm talking to the other day. And I'm like, blah, blah, she's blah, 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 she's blah, 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 she's blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, we should get together sometime and have a beer or something. And she's like, oh yeah. And then immediately changes the subject. She said, oh yeah, to me saying we should get together and have a beer, not because she's going to get together with me and have a beer. She's not. That was a lie. She said that because that's what I wanted to hear. She did not want to alienate me because sometime in the future, she might want access to some type of resources or provisions that I can provide for her. Once again, this is not evil. This is biology. Women say what anyone they're talking to wants to hear. If that means telling absolute lies, they will do it. Because women, I've explained this before, and this more evidence, women do not have a concept of objective right and wrong. For women, it is not wrong. It's not objectively always wrong to kill people, okay? So if you killed some people and, well, you're a Muslim, well, that's okay because you're a victim of Islamophobia. If you killed some people with a missile launched from a flying robot and you're half black and you're a Democrat, see, that's okay because half black Democrats care about poor people. However, if you launch some missiles into Syria and you're a white man with orange hair, see, now it's wrong because white men with orange hair are literally Hitler. Women do not have an objective concept of right and wrong. I am not just saying this to hear the sound of my own voice. They do not. They are not fucking biologically capable of it. Their brains are not wired to understand objective concepts of right and wrong. They can't. They do not. It's not there. Killing people is perfectly acceptable if you're half black, or if you're a Democrat, or if you're a woman, or if you're a Muslim. Killing people is wrong if you're a white man, if you're heterosexual, if you're a Mormon, if you're a Christian, if you're a Jehovah's Witness. There is no fucking standard of right and wrong anyone, right? Raping a woman is wrong if you're a white man, but raping a woman is okay if you're Leah Dunham and you're raping your little sister, okay? They don't understand right and wrong. They only understand their emotions. They only understand telling people around them what those people want to hear, also known, of course, as virtue signaling. And so that's why this chick says to me, oh yeah, we should go get a beer sometime. Not because she was actually going to follow through on this. She said it because she thought that's what I wanted to hear. This is why you can't take women seriously. They can't be in the workplace. They can't be allowed to vote. Everything they say is a lie. All right. There's my nice big swig of water there. To counteract some of the delicious Mango King from Funkworks Brewery, let's get back to segueing on the topic of lies. Back to the book, ADHD Nation, Children, Doctors, Big Pharma, and the Making of an American Academic by Alan Schwartz. We are on, by we I mean I, are on page 67. You are too if you're reading the book along with me. Again, this is a really good book. I know I say this about all the books I do book discussions about, because if I'm going to bother to talk about it on the podcast, it's a good book. But man, this is a really good book. It's really well written. It's very readable. He gives everything a nice narrative. He doesn't bury you with all sorts of complex shit where you know, scientific crap. Something like this, you could easily throw in a lot of scientific crap and bog somebody down. This is a great read. If you like to curl up with a good book, like I know Aaron Cleary does, I just make him cringe. Oh, by the way, fucking CLS.link, CLS link, go there. Amazon banner, it's at the top, unless your ad blocker is blocking the banner, which it might be doing. Click on the banner, go to Amazon, spend your money, give me a fucking percentage, okay? Don't be assholes. I bring that up only because I bought some shit on Amazon the other day, and when we're finished recording, I'm actually going to go buy some more shit on Amazon. And I did so via Aaron Cleary's Amazon affiliate link over at captaincapitalism.blogspot.com, and it wasn't working in some of my browsers because of the ad blocking and all this other stuff. So here's something that occurred to me. So let me tell you this. If you like the ad blocking, because if you're like me, like I use Firefox most of the time, and I have a number of extensions in Firefox that block advertisements and block scripts and block cookie tracking and all this other shit. And then I also use Brave, which has ad blocking built into it. And so that didn't work with the Amazon affiliate link either. Well, I have another web browser I use. It's called Opera. You can find it. It's on the interwebs because it's a web browser. If you type, you know, go to Google, Opera web browser, find it, download it. And the point of this being, if you do the non-cookie blocking or whatever, if you do the cookie blocking, or even if you have a browser that does it automatically, get Opera. I don't think it has any kind of blocking enabled by default, but you go in, you turn it off, and the point is that I use Opera as my web browser when I don't want to block all the cookies and the spyware and all this other shit for something like the Amazon affiliate links. And that way you can go to Amazon, you can go through the affiliate link, and the code gets in there, doesn't get filtered out by ad blocking or anything like that. All right, so there. Don't say I never did you any favors. I've explained to you how to give me money. If you go to cls.link and you don't see the fucking Amazon banner at the very top, at the very left, the thing says, click here, buy Amazon. I don't know what the fuck it says. It says something. If you don't see it, download Opera and try using that. When you see the fucking banner, click on the fucking banner, go to Amazon, spend money, don't be a dickhead. I'll be a dickhead. That's my fucking job. You need to not be a dickhead. All right, speaking of dickheads, let's talk about ADHD and pharmaceutical corporations and doctors who lie. Page 67. First full paragraph to top of page 69. All right, here we go. Oh, we're at another fucking panel. Let me go back. Where's the... Let's see, every 15 or the new speaker would take the podium. What is this? For the... As for the so-called... So what's this? Connor, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. There's a conference in Maryland. ADHD. Okay, so we're at this conference in Maryland. And I'm trying to see what year this happened. See, I always take these notes. I should read these parts of the book, but then they're all not necessarily ever in context. All right, I don't see the year that this is happening. But anyhow, we're in Maryland. We're having a conference about ADHD. With the news cameras rolling and microphones on, the panel's chairman, Dr. David Kuffner of the University of Pittsburgh, delivered some opening remarks before taking questions from the press and the public. He steadfastly reasserted ADHD's validity. He dodged issues of misdiagnosis and improper prescriptions of Ritalin. Nothing to see here, folks. Matters were reasonably under control until a NPR reporter asked, almost in desperation, for the panel to please just describe what a typical ADHD child actually looks like. Kuffner tried to sidestep the question, but the reporter didn't let him off the hook. This was apparently back in the days when journalists actually did something resembling their jobs. Nowadays, of course, if somebody came out and said, well, 70% of all white male children have ADHD, all the reporters in the room would, of course, just drop to their knees and start sucking this guy's cock. Unless it was a woman, but it would probably be a tranny woman, and they would start sucking... Oh, God, do I even want to talk about that? They would start sucking the tranny woman's cock. My mother, the left-wing statist, I talked about her, right, she sent me another email with this, and throws in this desperate stuff about how now the evil Republicans in the state of Texas, they're going to pass a law that says transsexual children have to use the bathroom according to their gender on their birth certificate when they're in school. And she wrote something to the effect of, I bet all of those transsexual children are really going to feel even worse now. And I'm thinking to myself, Mother, how can you be this stupid? I know the answer because you're a left-wing statist. You voted for Obama twice. But there's no such thing as a transsexual child. Children don't even fucking know what sexuality is. They have no clue. This is just like, and my mother, the militant atheist, right? This is exactly like when the Christians, I remember, and this happens on both sides, the Christians indoctrinate their children and the kids come out and they say that Jesus is awesome, you know, whatever. And it's like, you can, the kid hasn't, this is like an 8-year-old child, right? 9-year-old child, a 10-year-old child, an 11-year-old child. A 12-year-old child. This 12-year-old child has not sat down and analyzed the scriptures and thought about things philosophically and came to a conclusion that there's an invisible man in the sky. And of course, atheists do the same thing to their children. They indoctrinate their children with atheism. And they trot these kids out on television or whatever, and the kids say something about blah, blah. It's like, this is a fucking 11-year-old kid. This kid has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. He's just saying these words that his parents or some other sick adults have beat into his head. And the idea that there are 11-year-old kids who are transsexuals. This 11-year-old boy has decided, I am a girl. He doesn't even know the fucking difference between a boy and a girl. There's no such thing as transsexual children. There are only children who have really fucked up parents. There is no such thing as a transsexual child. They do not exist. It's just like ADHD. Most of these kids are not ADHD. They just have shitty parents. Okay. Kuffner tried to sidestep the question, but the reporter didn't let him off the hook. He asked again, remarking that the group sounded like it was resorting to Juster Pottis Stewart's description of pornography. I know it when I see it. Kuffner recoiled, clearly put off by the reporter's insolence. Once again, this is the olden days when reporters actually fucking did their jobs, apparently. Can you imagine any fucking reporter, especially a fucking piece of filth from NPR, actually questioning the diagnosis of children with ADHD in the year 2017? Can you imagine this happening? Because I can't. Now, I have a pretty good imagination. I can imagine me having rabid sex with Supergirl, and Supergirl isn't even a real person. She's just a cartoon drawing. So my imagination is okay. I can also... Well, never mind. We don't want to talk about what I can imagine me doing with the CSU women's volleyball team, a couple of dildos, and a whole bunch of olive oil. Anyway, he stepped back from the podium and asked for someone to provide the answer. The panel went silent. After several increasingly awkward cricket chirping seconds, Kuffner realized that this was not good. He had to just call on someone. He chose Mark Vonnegut, a pediatrician from Massachusetts. Dr. Vonnegut was the son of novelist Kurt Vonnegut, I don't give a fuck. Novelist sucked, and so does his doctor, who, having endured significant psychiatric troubles himself, took a special interest in children's emotional as well as physical ailments. And it's great to know, oh, you became a doctor because you had psychiatric problems. You know, if I'm going to have a doctor, or if I'm going to take my kid to a pediatrician, I would prefer a doctor who didn't have psychiatric problems. I would prefer a doctor who wasn't fucked up in the head. I would prefer a doctor who became a doctor because he wanted to help people and make money, not a doctor who became a doctor because he has mental problems. Kuffner picked Vonnegut because he had seen and treated ADHD children at his own practice. But Dr. Vonnegut, caught off guard like a fourth grader summoned to the chalkboard to reduce a fraction, took a breath, waited, stumbled some more, and finally bumbled out oratory's longest slow-motion car crash. And that's the writing style of this book. I'm seriously, it's very enjoyably written. Okay, here we go. This is the transcript of oratory's longest slow-motion car crash, as described by Alan Schwartz. Here it is. This is Vonnegut's response. This is the transcript, word for word. I am going to read this without any editorializing. Remember, this is the answer to the question, what does a child with ADHD look like? What are the symptoms? What is the behavior? What are the things that a person looking at and observing and listening to an ADHD child will observe? Because remember, ADHD is a real disease. This is a real thing. We can identify it. This is real. We're not just making this up. This is not a figment of imagination. This is not something we come up with just to sell drugs. This is a real disease that has symptoms, just like cancer or the cold or pneumonia or laryngitis or a broken leg. There, sigh. I think the panel has been frank in, you know, the difficulties here are immense in terms of these kids. I mean, clears throat. It is hard. It's very hard to know how to answer this question. These kids, in my experience, when you see these kids, they are, you know, several standard deviations different in terms of they cannot sit still, they cannot attend their, they cannot, you know, even when, they are as if driven by a motor. There are some good clinical descriptions of these kids. These kids do, if you spend time around children, and I'm not going to do a lot better than the Supreme Court here, these kids stick out like sore thumbs, and they are difficult. They aggravate their parents. But then it's further confounded by the fact that there are subtypes of attention deficit disorder where kids have the problems with inattention without the hyperactivity. I don't think the panel is saying anything different, although we've said it in more sophisticated ways, is the diagnosis is a mess. That's the answer. That's the answer to the question. That's not a description of symptoms. That's not a description of behavior. That's just babbling. That is a person who clearly has no fucking idea what he's talking about. No fucking idea. Because ADHD is a fucking made-up disease. If you ask somebody, what are the symptoms? What are the observable characteristics of somebody who has bubonic plague? What are the observable characteristics of somebody with a broken leg? What are the observable characteristics of somebody who's going into hypothermia? What are the observable characteristics of somebody with altitude sickness? What are the observable characteristics of somebody with tuberculosis? All of it. But what are the observable characteristics of a child with ADHD? Their deviation's different. They can't sit still. Again, that's every kid on the planet. They cannot, they're driven by a motor. They stick out like sore thumbs. Inattention. This is an educated person. This is somebody who had psychiatric problems who was young and decided since he's mentally fucked up, he should be a doctor. Sorry, kiddos. ADHD. Yes, there are a few people out there who legitimately have brain chemistry malfunctions. Yes. But all of his ADHD shit, it's just made up. It's made the fuck up. Okay. The room was stunned. After gathering the field's top experts and hearing 2 days of dozens of presentations claiming that ADHD was a serious problem affecting millions of children and causing such suffering that only years and perhaps lifetimes of medication could avert widespread social harm, the panel couldn't even describe a kid who had it. The experts went into crisis mode. There was no way to keep Vonnegut's spectacular soundbite, quote, "the diagnosis is a mess," unquote, out of heavy media coverage. They needed to drown it out with other messages reasserting that ADHD was every bit the problem they had always claimed it to be. One panel member, Lynn Fuchs of Vanderbilt University, told the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, "Parents have to weigh the risk of not treating with stimulants," unquote. And that, quote, "children with ADHD not treated go on to have serious consequences the rest of their lives," unquote. Russell Barkley reassured viewers of Good Morning America that the pills were, quote, "quite safe and effective, the side effects benign, and there's no evidence of any long-lasting harm," unquote. There was no evidence, perhaps, but at that juncture, long-term effects had not been formally examined. The experts diverted readers from Vonnegut's quote with enough move-along people boilerplate that the media coverage ended up less skeptical than simply confused. Page 95. Flipping ahead. Here we go. Oh, this is... All right, this is fun. Randy, where are we on time? All right, if I fucking don't editorialize too much, I can get this in. Roger Griggs was not a typical pharmaceutical executive. He grew up in post-war Indiana, about 3 miles from the Golden Dome of Notre Dame, but ultimately enrolled at Indiana State University, getting a master's in education and using it to become a high school football coach and occasional teacher. My God, I have a master's in education because I care about the children's. Needing a higher income... to pay off his student loans. Needing a higher income and always a strong and confident talker, Griggs later became a field representative at Lederland Laboratories in Wayne, New Jersey, extolling various drugs virtues to hospital personnel. In the early 1990s, he decided to start his own drug company, Richwood Pharmaceutical, and looked to purchase other companies with standing patents. One firm, called Rexar, had several intriguing products. Their little weight control drug named Obertol, however, was not one of them. That's because Obertol had one massive pitfall. It was an amphetamine. The few amphetamines doctors had prescribed through the 1980s were typically generic dexedrine knockoffs that only reminded people of Speed's scary and controversial past. Obertol was just one of many. When Griggs examined Rexar Pharmaceuticals' books in 1991, it had only $40,000 in sales. It was a drug about to die. But something was very strange about those sales. Randy, hold the closing music. We're going to go long because I want to finish this section. Griggs noticed that a curiously high percentage of prescriptions were being written by one doctor, a pediatrician in Provo, Utah, named Ron Jones. What was this Dr. Jones using Obertol for? In kids, no less. What did he know that no one else did? Griggs flew out to Provo to find out. Quote, "I use it for my kids with ADHD, Dr. Jones said. Griggs didn't want to admit that he had no earthly idea what ADHD was, so he chose his words carefully. Quote, "What situations do you use it in?" unquote, Griggs asked. Dr. Jones responded, quote, "I use it when Ritalin fails," unquote. "How often is that?" Griggs asked. Dr. Jones didn't know exactly, so he went to his patient files and started tallying up cases. "About half of the time," he said, "a child either didn't improve on Ritalin or had to stop because the train was coming." Now, it's not in the book, but the train is coming. The land whale is here. Gone down the track, land whale. Going down the track. Ah, the land whales. I love them. People say, great one, do you have a hard time sleeping at night because of the land whales? It's like, no, I really tune them out. It doesn't even faze me in the slightest. Dr. Jones didn't know exactly, so he went to his patient files and started tallying up cases. "About half the time," he said, "a child either didn't improve on Ritalin or he had to stop because of side effects." Now, in the context of the book here, in the... What's the word I'm looking for? The timeline. So Ritalin at this point is still the thing that is being given out to kids with ADHD. So this is the Ritalin ages. The Ritalin age. The time of Ritalin. Ritalin is what was automatically prescribed at this point. But when those kids switched to Obertrol, they improved 70% of the time. Why on earth, Griggs asked, would amphetamine be something considered for hyperactivity? Dr. Jones said he didn't remember their names, but some big doctors in the 1960s had found dexedrine to be helpful in calming uncontrollable children. Griggs didn't know the ins and outs of ADHD, but he did understand a 70% response rate. He wondered, could the United States, with its notoriously short memory, be ready to try amphetamine again? Of course it would, with the right marketing. What have I always said about the people of the United States? Not only are they stupid, they have no fucking memory. It's like, we're only what? How many months into the fucking Hussein? Not Hussein. What's his name? The Trumpenfuhrer. Already, people have forgotten Hussein Obama bombing 7 countries in 6 years. Already, we've just completely forgotten murdering Muslims with missiles launched from flying robots. And when Hussein Obama was elected, everyone immediately forgot all the campaign promises that he never followed through on, right? P.T. Barnum, was it the guy who said, "You never go broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public"? Well, you'll also never go broke underestimating the memory of the population of the United States. Griggs flew back to Cincinnati and told his Richwood staff, "We're going to buy Rexar Pharmaceutical, but we're going to buy it for a totally different reason than I thought." The name remained a problem. Obertrol, a meld of obesity and control. Obertrol? Maybe that's how you're... I don't care. It doesn't matter. Oh. Made no sense in the new context of child psychiatry. Griggs needed something new. Something catchy that wouldn't scare mothers off. Hyperine? No, hyperactivity wasn't the symptom. Wasn't the syndrome's only symptom anymore. Concertrex. Too mind-controlly. At its core, Griggs figured attention deficit hyperactivity disorder was too amorphous for him to build off anything specific. His drug needed to invite all comers. It needed to be inclusive. In late 1993, in the conference room of Richwood's headquarters in Florence, Kentucky, Griggs sensed a solution. He started with ADD and fiddled with some snappy suffixes. Children with the disorder could appear so dissimilar, some distractible, others hyperactive and impulsive, still more with a with a smorgasbord of symptoms. And of course there's a smorgasbord of symptoms because ADHD is not a real thing. ADHD is simply being a normal child. What word would capture them all? All for ADD. ADD for all. Adderall. It's just a matter of time.